Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where professionals in the attractions business can get insight, tips, tools, and even a bit of inspiration. Your hosts are two people familiar with the twists and turns and ups and downs of this great industry. Josh Lieben is the Director of Business Development for Amusement Advantage, and Matt Heller is the founder of Performance Optimist Consulting.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another phenomenal episode of the Attraction Pros Podcast. My name is Josh Liebman. I am with Amusement Advantage. Matt Heller from Performance Optimist Consulting. How are you doing today?
I am bouncing with excitement.
Why could you be bouncing with excitement? I can't imagine that tied in whatsoever with our guest today.
Right, because we get to talk to the purveyor of awesome, who is going to talk to us all about his businesses of trampoline parks and adrenaline junkie stuff. I can't wait. Let's just jump right in.
I can't wait either. I'm jumping off the wall. Sorry, I just had to join in there as well. So, let's just jump right into it. Again, there you go. Our guest today is Case Lawrence. He is the CEO of Circus Tricks. Circus Tricks is the largest owner, operator, and developer of indoor recreation parks in the world, with just about 100 locations. Case was just recently awarded the Entrepreneur of the Year Award for Utah's Consumer Services section. So congratulations to Case for that, and welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It is so great to have you here. Let's go back to what Matt just said right there. You are the purveyor of awesome. Can you explain a little bit about what that tagline means and where that came from?
Yeah, I think if those familiar with our logo and our brand, you know, our business is so new and so progressive, and it's really unlike anything that's existed before. When you're talking about trampoline parks and the ability to take these scaled, massive fields of trampolines and put them in an indoor environment, it's just so new and radical that we thought it would be kind of a fun irony when we created the branding of our company to kind of give it a vintage throwback vibe, if you will. And so we modeled a lot of what we did on sort of the old circus imagery and P.T. Barnum, if you will, and kind of that whole nostalgic circus aesthetic. And so our logo reflects that, and our tagline, we thought it was just a great ironic tagline to have purveyor, which is sort of this old world word, and then combining it with awesome, which really just sort of encapsulates all the fun stuff we do in these parks. So that's kind of the background, and it's grown on us. The more we've used it, it wears well, and I think the response to it has been really good in the industry.
That's great. I love the title. Can you tell us a little bit about how Circus Tricks was formed? Because you've been around for what, about 7 years now? Is that about right? Since 2011?
Yeah, that's correct. So Circus Tricks, it's really interesting how it started. You know, my entrepreneurial journey is unique. I was previously an attorney and practiced law for a while, and then I got into real estate development in the early part of the decade of, 2002, 2003 in California, and I developed real estate in California right on through the Great Recession. And I, at that time, was developing office space and industrial storage space and having a lot of fun and frankly having some success. And I just got hit with a buzzsaw in the recession. I mean, I was a stereotypical California commercial developer in 2008, and I was hit really hard. Spent 2 years of my life trying to work out with banks and climb out from under the recession. And frankly, my whole world at that time was just trying to avoid bankruptcy. In fact, I've told people, no matter what I ever accomplish in the entertainment industry with Circus Tricks, my greatest business accomplishment was avoiding bankruptcy in the recession. That was a difficult time to be in real estate, but survived, worked things out with the banks, and I was looking for a new profession. I needed to do something else, and I needed to put bread on the table for my family. And about that time, I had a little tradition with my sons. Every year we'd go up to a San Francisco Giants baseball game. And I was going up, it was a May spring game. And a friend of mine said, hey, while you're up there, you gotta check out this place called House of Air. It was one of the first trampoline parks in the country. There are probably less than 6 or 7 of these trampoline parks across the world at that time. And one of them was this House of Air in San Francisco. It was at the Presidio, at the Army base. They were redeveloping it, and they'd taken an old hangar and transformed it into this trampoline park. So I took my boys and we went and just had a phenomenal time. And it really was kind of a inflection point for me. I just had a overwhelming experience at this trampoline park. And something struck me about the physical nature of the trampolines, about the aesthetics of the environment, the music that was playing, the competition and the social dynamic of playing with my boys and watching other people compete at trampoline, dodgeball, and other things. And the whole thing was just really, it just struck me. And I left that trip with my boys determined to create one of these parks. And I thought, hey, I've developed real estate. I know how to do this. So I went and found a building, and I opened my first park in 2011 in Madera, California. And that was the beginning of Circus Tricks. And since then, it's just been hair on fire growth as I've spent the last 7 years just getting these facilities developed and really trying to push the limit of what we can put in these facilities. And it's been a fun adventure.
So Case, when you talk about, first of all, love the story, love the inspiration that you got from going to that first trampoline park. When you think about, you know, your title and your tagline of purveyors of awesome, and you think about pushing the limits of the things that you can put into your parks, what kind of things sort of hit that level of awesome that you want? And have there been things that you thought, well, that's maybe too risky or not awesome enough? We'll just kind of love to hear your thought process on that.
Right. Well, it's really interesting. I think, you know, we actually view our space, a lot of people, you know, are familiar with trampoline parks. We refer to our space as extreme recreation. And we're very grateful, I think, to the early trampoline park movement, because there's no question, I think trampoline parks have been a huge disruptor of the family entertainment center space, and probably the biggest disruption in the last 20 to 30 years. And to me, the biggest, the thing that is disruptive about the trampoline park is the introduction of physical activity as a form of entertainment, and trampolines and with a dose of adrenaline and a dose of something you just can't recreate at home or in a virtual environment. And so those guidelines sort of guide what we introduce into a space. It's got to be physical and be a very physical experience. It's got to have some dose of adrenaline, and it's got to be something that you really can't recreate at home or virtually. And so those are kind of the components that guide what we introduce into the parks. And we were, we kind of took that, and we were the first in the trampoline park space to introduce the Ninja Warrior course into these facilities. And we did that on a widespread basis and had a lot of success with that. That's been a big hit.
Can you elaborate a little on what the Ninja Warrior course is?
Yeah, so I noticed early on that this movement, what really began as a television show, American Ninja Warrior on NBC, that it was actually a movement. and that it was the seeds of a brand new sport and a brand new, you know, sporting culture and community. It actually reminded me of some, you know, kind of the early days of UFC or cage fighting, you know, where it began as almost these entertainment television shows or events, and really has turned into now a full-blown sport. And I recognize some of the same characteristics there. And I really enjoyed the show. Again, along with my boys, we would watch together. But we thought there's really no venue for these facilities, you know, or to get on a course like this. And that's the first instinct you have when you watch that show, is you're sitting there going, man, I really would like to try the salmon ladder and try the warp wall. And what you had across the country was a bunch of amateur courses that people were putting together, but no one had really tried to professionally produce something that could be utilized by the public. And so my feeling was that trampoline parks were the perfect place to introduce a ninja obstacle course. And so that's what we did. And the response was just overwhelming and immediate. And so we know that we really tapped into something in the zeitgeist there with the ninja courses. So that's an example of maybe one of the most successful, if not the most successful, introduction of a new product, you know, has done. I think we've had failures. We had one attraction that was basically a drop, kind of a coffin-like drop over a foam pit, and it just never worked and never took off. But we've had more successes than failures. We've introduced an indoor zip line that's been a big hit, an indoor trapeze that's been very popular. And one of the other original things we did was we were the first to introduce a slack line over a foam pit in an indoor environment, and that's been a big hit in our space as well. So those are some examples.
It's really interesting. You know, I'm looking on online right now, and I'm looking at this picture of, I think this is a foam pit. It's a large pit with multiple foam cubes of different colors, and on the wall it is this amazing mural of what looks like a brick wall, and there's two giant eyes looking right back at me, standing here looking at my screen here. And one of the things that I remember you talking about a couple of months ago when we met was the importance of your parks acting as a photo studio. And you mentioned briefly the connection with social media that you guys have. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that topic of what it means to have your parks be a photo studio for your guests.
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, one of the unique aspects of the extreme recreation industry and in the indoor trampoline park industry is that it's one of the newest and first entertainment industries to grow up in an age of social media. And in many ways, it is a product of that. And social media has really driven the growth and the interest and the popularity of these centers. You know, we live in a community, a culture, I should say, that is driven by social media, and we have a population and a generation that is actually planning their events, their social events, they're planning their activities during the week based on social media posting. That sounds superficial, but it is a very real dynamic, and we see it all the time. Trampoline parks and other FECs have the potential to do this, but our parks are a perfect opportunity for selfies. And we see ourselves in the business of selling selfies. All of those attractions I just mentioned earlier, they are all 2 to 3 second Snap or Instagram videos that can be shared. And we live in a world with a great demand for 2 to 3 second video snippets that are shareable on social media. So we take that seriously, and we look at our parks as if they are one big, highly produced social media photo studio. And we spend a lot of money on art. We spend a lot of money on visual production of the park. One example of that is, you know, a lot of people wonder why we black our ceilings out. We spend thousands of dollars on black paint. And the reason we do that is to create a studio gallery environment that leads to more highly produced videos and pictures. And as a result, people want to be in our parks and take selfies. And that's the world we live in today. So we are not only in the entertainment business, we are in the selfie business. And I think anyone in amusement and entertainment today has to take that element very seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah, and absolutely.
And it's so interesting that you've kind of looked at this sort of inside out, right? Where a lot of places will say, well, we've got this nice landscape and that's great, but they don't really think about it as the end user of somebody putting a phone in front of them and taking the picture and what that's going to look like. And is that shareable? And is that the image that they want to be shareable? And certainly that's something that you've thought a lot about, it sounds like. And it also goes into the experiences that you're creating. It is about the attractions, but also the overall experience. And, you know, when you were talking about all the different activities that people had, the first thing that kind of came to my mind was all these, you know, entertainment entities that are trying to add virtual reality. And, you know, there's a real difference there. Like, they're trying to add some sort of, you know, visual and auditory stimulation to something that they're doing physically, where yours is all about the physical and all about the real. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about maybe even the differences in how your experiences have driven people to come there and get excited, and where you see even some of that technology either being a help or a hindrance to the entertainment value.
Yeah, I think, let me answer that the way what I think you're asking, which, you know, it can be. Those of us in the entertainment business, amusement business, all of that, I think sometimes when we hear that we need to get into social media and utilize social media, I think people think that means we need to post. We need to be actively posting things on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat.
Right.
What the reality is, and the more we've learned and gotten into it, and I think what those who do find, that the most effective thing you want to do is you want to create other people. You want to create an environment where other people are posting in your facility or at your amusement park or at your trampoline park, and they're posting and tagging and referencing and doing all of that to you. That is much more valuable. And so you have to look at it from a participatory standpoint. How do I drive social media participation in my park? Not necessarily even, or at least anymore, how I communicate with people on social media. That can still be valuable, you know, as a marketing tool to reach out and reach people on social media. But I think we're at a point in our business where we're thinking a lot more about how do we get people to participate? Because when people participate on social media and, you know, in your facilities and intertwine you in that participation, that is the most incredible authenticator of awesomeness, to coin our own phrase, that you can get. It's the best kind of authentic marketing. It is word of mouth. It is endorsement. It is all of that, all wrapped up into one. And so that's what we're pursuing all the time.
And, you know, you say it's word of mouth, and what, you know, it's really the evolution of what word of mouth has become. It's no longer words. You know, back before there was any social media, word of mouth was literally you are telling people that you know personally, your friends, families, neighbors, coworkers, whatnot, Whether it's a recommendation to visit or, you know, a recommendation not to visit. And then the next step in the evolution was the online component of it with TripAdvisor, which is still, for the most part, you know, written narrative. It is still word of mouth. And now this is so much powerful than any of those combined, or especially, you know, you take the two, you put them together. Now here's the photo and the video, and it's able to be magnified through social media, that it, you know, word of mouth needs to be renamed because it's no longer words.
That's very well said. And I think that's exactly right. I mean, never before in the history of business has there been the capability of measuring word of mouth. And now we really can. We can do it through NPS scores. We can do it through reach on social media. We can do it through all of these things. And so, so it's really a new day in that regard. And there's just, you know, there's no business like trampoline parks, like amusement parks, like the entertainment space that causes joy, as much joy in human beings as our industry. And so, we have to be obsessed with word of mouth, because that is, when you're talking about human joy and fun, there's never, ever, ever going to be a more effective marketing element than, you know, positive word of mouth.
What are your thoughts towards platforms like Snapchat and Facebook Live, which are incredibly powerful in the moment communication tools, but also kind of self-destructive as well, where the image or the video is no longer available after a very short period of time? Is that still benefiting you because it's telling people in the moment, even though it's not lingering or searchable?
Yes, I think we've found great value in that. And, but we found it, you know, it, the value is when you deploy it at a specific special moment.
Right.
So
right.
The example I would give you is, you know, we have, on Friday and Saturday nights in our parks, we have, clubs. So the lights go off, you know, the laser and black lights go on. There's an age limit, it's 16 or over. We're trying to create a club environment, trying to create sort of a weekend party feel to what's happening in the park then. And we found that it's very effective to launch into Facebook Live feeds on those weekend evenings when that's happening, and to create a sense of, you know, hey, come on down. One of the social media dynamics we didn't mention, and your question here brings it up, is, you know, one of the new words in Webster's dictionary last year, which is FOMO, F-O-M-O, mm-hmm. Fear of missing out.
Yeah.
That is a huge component of social media. And I think Snap and Facebook Live really tap into that dynamic. And if they're deployed at the right time on a weekend evening, they can be massively effective.
And it creates envy.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, real quick, Josh. So I'm guessing that you're of course encouraging people to do as much of that posting while they're in your facility. Are they also taking up with, you know, a Facebook Live video in addition to you know, posting pictures and that type of thing? Are they going to that level as well, your guests?
Yes, and we, you know, a very simple thing, and I think it really is available to almost any small business now. But, you know, we have big screens in the parks, and we coax customers to post with, you know, our hashtag for the park, and then it goes up on the screen, so people are able to literally participate and throw their own tweets or their own Instagrams or their own Facebooks or Snaps. If they put the hashtag on, it will throw it up onto the big screen, and so they can literally enter the community that way. That's a small thing, but I think those types of apps and tools are available now to most small businesses, and I think it's very effective. And I think it also goes, you know, there are other basic things that can be done, just like creating selfie spots, you know, creating deliberate parts of your facility that are made to be selfie spots with good art, with good lighting, with good angles, with whatever you need, and then even inviting people to indeed take selfies there, sort of reminding them that not only are they welcome to do that, they're encouraged to, and that we've taken some effort to make this an ideal little part of the universe for you to do that. And people respond to that, and it reminds them, oh yeah, we should take a selfie and post it. So there are really basic things that any small business owner can do, and certainly any larger amusement owner can do to really drive this. It's not all super sophisticated. There's some basic steps you can take.
Do you find that you need to do a lot of pushing or influence towards that Snapchatting and selfieing? But it sounds like with your demographic that's visiting, that's probably happening organically.
It is.
So are you posting things like, hey, take a selfie here, or don't forget to use this hashtag, or is it just posting the hashtag, or just creating the environment that your guests know, oh, we need to snap this?
Yeah, it really depends on your business, and you're exactly right. In our business, we can be very subtle. If someone's when someone's in an entertainment environment, they are naturally looking, as we said earlier, looking for opportunities to post, and so that's never a problem. So we try to be more subtle. We don't need to sort of be really overt. But we find that there are subtle incentives that you can put out there, like simply, broadcasting their posts with a certain hashtag. Those tend to be effective.
Right.
So in a lot of conversations about social media, the word branding comes up, and what I think is really unique about your properties is they're all branded differently, which seems to be sort of the opposite of, a lot of FECs that will call their facilities the same thing in different places for brand recognition and that type of thing. And I'm just curious about your awesome approach to branding these places differently, and how that's had a positive or a negative effect.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a question I get often. We made a decision early on that we were going to build strong local brands, and that we were going to build strong, distinguished individual brands in each market, as opposed to having a brand that crosses markets. We did this for a couple reasons. One is, in the FEC space, certainly in trampoline park space, there's significant enterprise risk. You have great liability. There are safety concerns. And, we actually saw the negative side of brand, meaning, hey, if you have a bad injury or a bad liability in a facility, we wanted to silo that and keep that from spilling over into other facilities and affecting the brand of other facilities that we own.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole discussion around that that's very interesting. But one of the accidental things that we found is that we really believe now, and this, we didn't go into it knowing this, we learned it as we went, but given social media as the favored marketing mediums, our experience is that having separate brands is actually better for social media. Now, in the older days, when the goal is television or radio, it really does benefit to have a larger brand. You get more play and more mass media type of efficiency if you can advertise and market on a television and radio medium for a broader audience. And so I think that drove people to really pursue larger brands that could transcend markets. Now, when all of our marketing is done on Facebook and Instagram and Snap, which can be geo-targeted to the upteenth degree, what we have found is we really don't find any disadvantage of not having a national brand, other than we can't do a Super Bowl ad. And we actually find a lot of advantage, meaning if someone goes to Facebook and they look up, you know, a name of a national brand, typically for our space, they're going to find, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of pages and accounts for different facilities that fall under that national brand. For us, on the other hand, if they're looking for Sector 6, which is our park in New Orleans, there's only one Sector 6 on all of Facebook, on all of Instagram, on all of Snap. Very distinguishable, very findable, very recognizable. And they go to that and they find it has a critical mass of followers, tens of thousands of followers. And so we have successfully created this small social media brand around that local facility. And in our business, we found that when it comes to social media, we're trying to create followings for our facilities, not for a brand, but for our facilities, which are local and very tangible. So that's our experience. And I think it's a useful case study given the social media world we live and how that interplays with actual brick and mortar locations. And when you're trying to drive traffic to a specific facility location.
Does that affect your growth strategy at all? Do you not build within the same market? Whereas, if you look at Rock and Jump, you know, there's two locations in the suburbs of Chicago. Would you not do something like that because of potential confusion of that the two compete with each other with that, you know, consumer awareness? Or do you still enter the same markets and build the individual brands?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the answer to it is it's more of a reflection that to date we have not done that. You know, we've had basically one park in each metro market. Now, as we get bigger and as we grow and as we start to put multiple parks in a market, that does change the calculus, because then you start to say, okay, we could get more efficiency and mileage out of marketing that would apply to all of these multiple facilities. So I could see that changing in the future if we are, you know, if we continue to grow and have multiple facilities in any one metro market.
Sure.
So Case, you've been talking about, you know, your hair on fire growth, and congratulations. I think that's fantastic. Of course, with that comes some growing pains. And I wonder if you could just talk about, you know, your strategy on growing your staff and the people that can help run the centers and all that has had to grow exponentially, just as, you know, as you add centers, you're adding people. So what's sort of been the people strategy behind this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of a unique answer and maybe a little different than what a lot of others have done. But we've had great success in colonizing our people and our culture. And what I mean by that is we really believe at Circus Tricks that the way to grow is to send your people to a spot on this planet Earth to open a facility and run it and manage it. So instead of, say, for example, we're opening in Las Vegas. Instead of looking for a manager in Las Vegas to hire, we are always going to send a Circus Tricks person to Las Vegas to open that facility. Mm-hmm. And we grow those people internally, and we have a great program for identifying, mentoring, and bringing people up internally in our organization. People that start as hourly, you know, part-time workers as teenagers or young adults, we really see a lot of value in bringing them along and training them in the Circus Tricks way, and then colonizing them across the country and even globally at facilities that we open elsewhere. So that's sort of our philosophy, and it's really important. The challenge, you know, and inherent in your question is, the real challenge in this business is operating facilities as you're growing and being able to scale the operation side. And so we really believe that you don't want to reinvent that every time you open a new park. We want to colonize it from our existing successful parks and bring people from those existing successful parks and put them in any new park we open. So that's our growth philosophy on and how we operate. And I think that's been the biggest challenge to scaling our growth, has been continuing to, you know, keep up with the facilities with good people that we've mentored and given enough experience to.
And what about when it comes to ensuring those quality standards across each of those locations? Because I know that that can be a huge growing pain for, you know, rapidly expanding facilities. And there was something that you talked about a couple of months ago when we met that I thought was such an interesting concept. And it was the broken window theory. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that and talk about how you apply that to your business.
Yeah, that's thanks for asking that. That's been a guiding ideology in our business from our very beginning. And it really came from my own personal experience. About the second or third week of visiting my park, the first park that I opened, called Skywalk in Madera, California, I was there on a Saturday afternoon, and it was packed. We were sold out, and in particular, in a trampoline park environment, there is just a natural sense of chaos everywhere. People are jumping. There's music. It's loud, and people walk in there, and it really overwhelms people. And so part of what we've tried to do is to really create a sense of structure in the parks. And what we found is that parents know when they take a kid to a trampoline park that there is some inherent danger, that it's a physical risk, you know, risky, not risky, but it's a very physical and active pursuit, and that there's a chance of injury. And so what we believe is the most important thing is we have to create a mental assurance to the parents that there is an order of structure in our facility. That here in this place that's selling the opportunity to just jump on trampolines and fly on a trapeze and go on a ninja course and go on an indoor zip line, all this crazy adrenaline heavy stuff, it has to be countered with the thought in a parent's mind especially, and everyone's mind, that this is done in an environment that is structured and that there's order and that there's attention to detail. And our belief is that that is all the more important when you have a really adrenaline heavy, physicality heavy environment like a trampoline park. So we have implemented the broken windows theory, and it actually comes from law enforcement. And the concept was made famous. It was actually developed by James Q. Wilson at UCLA, and it was implemented and made famous by Rudy Giuliani as mayor of New York. And the idea was, the theory and is that if you focus on details and even crack down on the minor offenses that happen in any neighborhood or community, that it will create a sense of order. And that sense of order will lead to an overall decrease in crime. So, for example, in New York City, when Rudolph Giuliani became mayor, he cracked down on vandals. So any graffiti there was a focus on cleaning and correcting any graffiti that was vandalized, that they would act quickly to get that done. He also cracked down on gate jumpers in the subway, people who were jumping the subway gate to get in free on the subway. micro crime, not a huge cost probably to the city. But Giuliani cracked down on it because it was creating a sense of disorder in the community. And so the numbers are there. Anyone can look at it. You know, it was very successful in New York City. Once they started cracking down on those detailed minor infractions, it created a sense of order in New York City, and the overall crime rates dropped significantly. And we think there's a lot of analogy for that in trampoline parks. That if we can create an order, an environment of order and a sense of structure, that it will reduce injuries, it will moderate people's risk-taking behavior. And we have seen that in our incident rates. We've seen it in our safety record. And we really believe in that and preach that as a company.
Yeah, that's so important and so applicable to the entire industry and obviously, you know, way beyond, since you said it, you know, originated in law enforcement. You know, if I walk into a restaurant and there's trash on the floor, yeah, I'm going to think if this is what the front of house looks like, well, what does it mean as far as, you know, what the kitchen looks like and what risks am I getting into as far as, you know, things like that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, that is so many applications. Another thing that I want to ask you about is your inspiration from P.T. Barnum and his way of creating novelty and how you've implemented some of those practices into your parks.
Yeah, it's really funny and it's fitting you bring that up. Myself and probably many of you and listeners have recently seen Greatest Showman and or many in America are being exposed to P.T. Barnum for the first time. We've actually, we in our company, we really sort of lionize and talk about P.T. Barnum a lot and use some of the examples he used in his business, especially in regard to the idea of novelty and the need for novelty in American entertainment in general, but specifically for the American customer, what P.T. Barnum discovered about that, and those principles really still apply, they especially apply to the FEC and amusement space and certainly to the trampoline park space that we're in. My kids, when they saw the movie, I brought them home and told them, you realize that there really was a Tom Thumb, that there really was a bearded lady. Those weren't just... They didn't make that up, and my kids were kind of surprised by that. And the reality is, if you look back at what P.T. Barnum did, he was always bringing in something new. And it really didn't matter how substantive that new thing was, as long as it was new. And what he discovered is, whenever you had something new, it was an excuse to market something to your customers, and it was an excuse to get them to come back into a facility or to the circus, as it may be. And so one year it would be the bearded lady. The next year it was Tom Thumb. The next year it was the Fiji mermaid. The next year it was Ching and Chang, the original Siamese twins. You name it. Some of them aren't completely politically correct in our day and age, but the principle is there that he was always rolling out something new and giving people an excuse to come back in. And I think that's true today, and it's especially true with the social media dynamics that we've talked about, that you want to be giving people a new reason to come in and a new selfie to take. and so we can really all learn from the example of P.T. Barnum. I don't think it's a bad thing that he's making a little resurgence in popularity here in American culture. It's good for our industry for sure.
Absolutely.
So speaking of kind of what's new and bringing things in, to always have something new to offer, can you talk about what might be new at some of your facilities or what's new for Circus Tricks overall?
Absolutely. So I can tell you two new things we've rolled out this year, and I'll even give you a sneak peek into something we're working on. for next year. But this year, one of the things that we've rolled out is the parkour zone. So parkour is a rapidly growing, popularity increasing activity, has been in Europe especially, and is now spreading into the United States, driven by social media, can sometimes be known by different handles, including tricking. It is a hot community. And so we were looking for a way to sort of, kind of like the Ninja Warrior example, how do we capture that culture and bring it into the park? So we've rolled out an entire parkour element in our parks. It's been very popular and very, you know, well received. So that's one. The other thing we did this year in our new parks is we've rolled out full on bouldering walls over foam pits. So, you know, in the past, you know, you can only really get high production bouldering walls in a climbing facility. And we really wanted to make bouldering available to a younger audience and to a broader audience without harnessing up, without specialty equipment. And so we've rolled out a bouldering, you know, very nice, very highly produced bouldering wall, but done it over a foam pit. And we've seen that be very well received in our parks. So those are examples of two new attractions that we've rolled out. In for next year, we are busy in the lab, if you will, working on a wipeout attraction. And you may remember the old show.
Oh, yeah.
Over water, right?
Yeah. So we have an attraction we are just so excited about, and we're fine-tuning the details, but we're going to be rolling it out in our parks, and we think it's going to be just a absolute hit. So we're really excited about that. So stay tuned.
That's very cool.
So exciting.
First here on your podcast.
So let me ask this then. What's next for Circus Tricks? What's next for the company?
So I can announce to you on this show, it has not even been publicly announced yet, but Circus Tricks recently closed on the acquisition of our largest competitor, a company called SkyZone. So we acquired SkyZone, and we're merging their franchise platform and franchise business with our company at Circus Tricks. And together, this newly combined company will control almost 300 facilities worldwide, and will be the largest by far in both, you know, financial terms and in location, you know, number of locations of any company in our space, and really makes us one of the largest FEC operators in the world at this point. So it's a big move for our industry and certainly a big move for our company. And I'm excited to work with Jeff Platt and his team. They have a talented group of executives with just great experience and a lot of experience working and supporting franchise partners, and we're going to continue that and support them. So we're really excited for the future of our combined companies.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Success that you guys have had. Yeah. And continued success. And congratulations again on the Entrepreneur of the Year Award. That's, you know, a phenomenal accomplishment. We are running a little low on time here. We're almost up. But if people want to learn a little bit more about Circus Tricks, or they want to learn a little bit more about you, Case, where can you send them?
Yeah. So go check out our website. CircusTricks.com is a good place. And of course, we wouldn't be Circus Tricks if we didn't, you know, encourage you to visit our social media channels. So,
right.
We have a Circus Tricks. We have a Facebook page, a corporate Facebook page about, you know, for our company, as well as Twitter and Instagram and Snap, and all of them are Circus Tricks is our username across the board. So we'd certainly encourage everyone to check out our social media channels and our website. and to visit one of our parks across the world.
Absolutely. I have a feeling a lot of our listeners are going to be looking up where the nearest park is to them after listening to this episode, if they haven't already visited already. So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. This conversation was fantastic.
For having me.
Yeah, greatly appreciate it. And to all of you out there listening, thank you for listening. Thank you for being Attraction Pros, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on the Attraction Pros podcast. For more information on Josh Liebman, please visit amusementadvantage.com. For more information on Matt Heller, please visit performanceoptimist.com.